Good morning. Everybody wide awake? I'll try not to put you to sleep today. It's been a long week. A lot of things go on. It seems like that's how God works in our lives, isn't it? So it's going well. Lynn is gone. He's down at a conference, and then he's got MRIs and different things. This next few weeks. So he asked me probably a month ago if I would fill in, and I said, yeah. And then I looked at the calendar, and it was the night you turn your clocks ahead. So that gave me like two more extra hours of work and no sleep. So that's all right. Prom is at our school this week, and I had to work a lot of overtime, but God does a lot of things when I work. He gives me illustrations. It's just kind of the way he works with me or the way I think. And so I hope I've got some stuff for you today. If you were here on the 23rd of January, we started the book of Nehemiah. I am sure, like all good students, you've probably read and exegeted the whole book. So I won't have to spend too much time in my review as we go on. So we return to one of my favorite books in all of the Bible. It's just one of those that speaks to us in everyday language, but really gives us some great insight into what our lives are to be. So thank you for showing up, being here today. Thank you for those that are on YouTube. And excuse me. We'll get back into the book of Nehemiah. If you remember, just for brief review, Nehemiah talked to some of his buddies who had been in his homeland, his hometown, Jerusalem, but that really wasn't his hometown because he's been in captivity all that time. He's never been to Jerusalem. He doesn't even know what it looks like. They don't have iPhones. They couldn't bring him pictures. But he asks about the people that are there, the exiles that had gone back. And they told him, things aren't very good there. The wall's broken down and all of life is just really a mess in Jerusalem. And he didn't call a builder. He didn't call anybody else. He prayed. For 4 months, he prayed. That's what we got in chapter 1 of the book of Nehemiah. Prayed for 4 months. Then the day came as he was the cupbearer to the king, and I told you that he's the closest man to the king besides the king's wife. He's everything that goes in the king's mouth goes through the cupbearer's mouth first. If they tried to poison him, he dies before the king does. That was his job. Every day, at least 3 times to 5 times a day, he was tasting food and making sure that the king was in good shape. He had the king's ear, and the king had his. And that question comes on that day, Nehemiah, you look kind of down in the face. What's going on? So he prayed again, and then he tells the king why he looks so down. He tells him, My hometown is a wreck. The wall is down. Everything that we use for protection is tore down. And the king says, well, what do you want me to do, Nehemiah? What would you ask of me? He said, can I go back and rebuild it? Yeah, you can go back and rebuild it. How long are you going to need? Well, I'm not for sure. Okay, you can go as long as you need to go. And king, would you write letters so that I can get through all the provinces between Susa and Jerusalem? Pretty good trip. Yes, I'll write all the letters. And king, could I get timbers from your forests to rebuild all the gates? Because all the gates in my city are burned and tore down. You got it. What else do you need? You need food, you need anything. He wrote him letters, and Nehemiah makes the long trip to Jerusalem with the permission of King Artaxerxes. and his blessing. He arrived, he did his homework. If you remember, he went out at night, rode through the whole city, checking it out to see what needed to be done. Did it in the dark of night so no one would see, no other problems. Made a plan, got the plan together, told the people, and the people said, let's build. That was what was it. Then we get to verses 19 and 20 of chapter 1. And if you would like to turn there, you can, because my Sunday school class doesn't believe it, but we're going through four chapters today, and Lance, did I get 20 minutes? Four chapters. We've been in the book of Philippians for about 6 months, and there's only four chapters in there. So just giving you an idea of how long it might take us to get through this, okay? Just so you have an idea. But at the end of chapter 1 of the book of Nehemiah, or chapter 2, excuse me, verses 19 and 20, it says, but when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Amorite official and Geshem the Arab heard it, they mocked us and despised us and said, what is this thing you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king? Now, if I was secondhand man to the king, basically, saved his life for all many of those years, I probably would have stood up and said, yeah, king said I could do this. And it would have probably been okay. But Nehemiah didn't do that. Verse 20. So I answered them, therefore, as said to them, the God of heaven will give us success. Therefore, we, his servants, will arise and build, but you have no portion, right, or memorial in Jerusalem. The God of heaven, the King of all kings, has told me to come build this wall, and we're going to do it. We're going to do it, us and me, not me. He will give us success, and we'll make it through it. And that gets us to chapter 3 of the book of Nehemiah. And that's where we're going to begin. You might want to turn there. We're going to skip through chapter 3 pretty quick. But you at least need to kind of know what's going on there. The plot thickens as oppression comes in chapter 2. Has anyone ever had oppression in their life? Okay, just so I know if I'm talking in the same place. It will come. And the work that you have to do, Nehemiah, is going to be tough. And the reason is, when you attach yourself to God and what God loves, the reverse is true. Satan hates anything that God loves. And you are guaranteed that there is going to be opposition in your life. It's going to happen. We don't just get to walk through it all free. When you align and attach yourself with God to do something he wants you to do, you've put a bullseye on your back. And there will be those like Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, who we will see through the rest of the book, that try to cause as many problems as they possibly can for Nehemiah and his group. He's got that on there. If you don't believe that's a fact, I'm going to give you just a couple stories in the Old Testament and even the New Testament that prove my point. You guys all remember David, the little guy with the slingshot? He was a pretty good shot. He had a cake job. He sat on the grassy knolls next to bubbling brooks, and sheep ate grass. That's what he did all day. Except if there were bears or wolves or whatever else that would come and get him, he would take care of them. But he had a cake job. He slept under the stars at night, had campfire coffee every morning. It's a great job, and I don't even like coffee, but it sure smells good. I think David had a great job, and one day, the Samuel, the prophet, shows up at David's camp. You know what he tells him? David, God has chosen you to be the king of Israel. Oh, really? When do I start? Well, it'll be a little while. Saul's still the king. But when he's done, it's your job, David. For the next decade, The king of Israel tried to throw a spear through David as many chances as he could get. David hid out in the rocks. He hid out in the caves. He could have killed Saul twice, never did it, because you don't mess with the king. But for 10 years, his life was uprooted from the grassy knolls and the brooks and Camp Coffee to running from the king of Israel. When you attach yourself to God and he attaches to you, you can expect opposition. Moses, our good old buddy Mo, he learned about it from his father-in-law, Jethro. Jethro watched him working with all those crazy Israelites. He said, Mo, you can't do this on your own, buddy. Yeah, I can. No, you can't. You need help. And they set out a plan to give him some help so that he could do his job. And it was not an easy job. Moses had all sorts of opposition in his life as he went through. So this is something that we should plan on if you're going to do God's work. Saul was going to try and take out the lineage of the Messiah by killing David. And God wasn't going to let it happen. But it wasn't an easy thing. Satan likes nothing better than to take the wind out of our sails when we're moving in God's direction. And that's what goes on in Nehemiah's life, and we'll see it today. How many of you have ever seen the TV show Extreme Makeover? Ever watched it? The Biggest Loser? Maybe that one. Any of those DIY, do-it-yourself shows where they show them tear down a whole house and build it back in 1 hour? It's amazing. And they have the reveal at the end. In 1 hour, they've done it all. Well, every one of those producers took their plan for their show from the life of Nehemiah. Because everything that happens in those shows takes place today. Usually when I preach a sermon, I usually close with a lot of application or trying to give you that. But when you preach in the Old Testament, you preach whole stories usually. That's why we get to go through four chapters, because 52 days takes us four chapters to get through. So that's what we're doing. And in that, opposition will come. Nehemiah will react. We're going to apply it, and then we're going to go to the next one. So at the end, there's not going to be a lot of application. So you will have to listen through the middle part, not just at the end. So that's where we're at, okay? The wall, Extreme Makeover, is now beginning. We'll start with some historical facts, and they're going to put a picture up behind me. I hope you can see it. I don't know if you can or not. Oh, yeah, we can see it. It's good. Just some facts, and the map shows us a little bit about it. I don't know if anybody has ever visited Jerusalem. Anybody ever been there? Been there, okay. Were you there in Nehemiah's day? That's why I put this map up there, and because I didn't think anybody had been there. So, just a few things that we needed to go through. This is the dark line is the wall around the city of Jerusalem in 445 BC. Now, today, if you went there, there would be a wall starting right here that would come clear out here and come down here and then would hook to right there and make it almost two times, three times bigger than what it is. But in Nehemiah's day, that's the size that it was. 2.5 miles from the start up there at the sheep gate all the way around, 2.5 miles. Now, I don't know how many of you are good at 2.5 miles, but my trusty assistant, Gary Tagg, he drove me out 2.5 miles down here with some landmarks that you'll know. If you all get in your car and you go out to the drive-in theater and there's a big screen out there, and you start driving slowly or walking if you would like to, and if you want to pick up a rock and carry it all the way to Murdoch's, 2.5 miles. 13,200 feet of wall, just to give you an idea. That's how long it was. It was 40 feet tall. When you're there at the big screen for the old drive-in, That's about a 40-foot tall screen. That's how tall the wall was in Jerusalem. 2.5 miles long, 40 feet tall by 8 feet thick, median width. At the bottom, it was much wider, and it went to where you could walk around on the top. Those are just a couple simple facts. I don't know how many rocks it took to build it. A lot. That's a good answer. Okay? So that's where we're at. And if you were on that trip in Jerusalem today, they'd bring you to a certain place in the wall, and they'd say, right there is Nehemiah's wall that he rebuilt in 445 BC. We would all grab our cameras, take a few pictures, put your wife out there and take a picture of her down and say, oh man, it was the coolest thing. I saw Nehemiah's wall. I do not believe that's what the Israelites in Nehemiah's day were saying. I think they went, oh my gosh, we got a lot of work to do. We got to rebuild this whole thing. I don't think it would be the same reaction that we have. So, just a few things that we need to do. There are 10 gates. The first one was the sheep gate. Every gate has been burned and tore down. All the timbers, all the doors, all the bolts, all the bars that are in the gates are gone. There's no protection for the city. And the plan is to start at the sheep gate, and we're going to move counterclockwise to the fish gate, to the old gate, to the valley gate, to the fountain gate, to the water gate, to the horse gate, to the east gate, to the inspection or muster gate, and back to the sheep gate. Now, all the wall has not been leveled. It has been breached. It's been tore down so that people could get through, and every gate has been burned. There's no protection for the city. Nehemiah has just said in verse 20 of chapter 2, we and us and God will find success here. He does not mention his name once. In the chapter 3 that we are going into, it is 32 verses long, and Nehemiah's name is never found in the 32 verses. Some of you that have read ahead and are good students said, oh, yes, it is. Look at verse 16 and Nehemiah, but you didn't read on any farther. Who's his daddy? Abizek, if that's how they say it. And who is Nehemiah's dad? Hakaliah in chapter 1, verse 1. Different guy, same name. Nehemiah is not mentioned in this chapter. So those are just a few of the facts that we're going to go through. There is a phrase that is used 14 times in this chapter that is very important for us to get a hold of today. Next to them. Next to them. Next to them. Little three-word phrase. Shenandoah made it a really famous song, if you know what it is. Next to you, next to me. It's kind of what they must have sang it while they were doing it. Because in the 2.5 miles of the city, each family would build part of the wall that was on their neighborhood, close to their house. And their neighbor next to them built the next section, and the next neighbor, and the next neighbor, and the next neighbor all the way. That was the plan of how they would rebuild it. Now, in some places, the wall wasn't tore down very bad. So you just moved next to them, and you helped build where they did till they got around. There are 38 individuals named in that chapter. Nehemiah is not one of them. There are 42 groups of people named in that chapter. Different groups had different gates to build because that took longer to build than hauling the rocks. So that's the history. That's all that is going on in the book as we go through it. Let's start in Nehemiah chapter 4, verses 1 through 3. No, let's start in 3, excuse me. Then Eliashib, The high priest rose with his brothers, the priests, and built the sheep gate. They consecrated it and hung its doors. They consecrated the wall to the Tower of the Hundred and the Tower of Hanel. And next to him, the men of Jericho built. And next to them, Zakur, the son of Imri, built. Now the sons of Manasseh built the fish gate. They laid its beams and hung its doors with its bolts and bars. And next to them, Meremoth, the son of Uriah. And son of, and all those names that you can't say. And next to him, verse 5. Verse 7, next to him. Verse 8, next to him. Verse 8 twice. Verse 9, verse 10, verse 12. You can read them. That's what they're doing. And then we get down through the rest of that. They had help, and they were ready to go. And opposition is bound to come their way. I believe, for application, that the way Nehemiah built the wall is the way the church of today should build. Next to them, next to him, next to him. It is not a spectator sport. We all have to be involved. It's not just the preacher's job. It's not just the elders. It's not just Nadine's job. It's all of our jobs to stand next to and go forward and build for application. That's part of our job. That's what you're called to. If you don't believe me, it's not a New Testament thing. Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 12. It says, not one member, but many. And we are to work together as one body. And those are the things that we might learn from the first part of next to him and next to us. Then we're already done with chapter 3, so we ought to be able to get through this pretty fast. Chapter 4. Now it came about when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding. Now Sanballat has already asked. He's already called them feeble. What are they going to do? They think you're going to rebuild us in a day? All of those things that he said. He became furious and very angry, and he mocked the Jews. And he spoke in the presence and the wealthy men of Samaria and said, who are these feeble Jews? What are they doing? Are they going to restore it as for themselves? Can they offer sacrifices? Can they finish it in a day? Can they revive the stones from the dusty rubble, even the burned ones? Now Tobiah the Amorite was near him, and he said, even when they are building, if a fox should jump on it, it would break down their stone wall. Can you imagine the laughter in that group? Those feeble people. What are they trying to do? Mocking was the first sign of opposition that came. You don't have to raise your hand. But have you ever been mocked? You ever been ridiculed? You know how it feels. Have you ever mocked or ridiculed somebody? I'll raise my hand. I probably have. It is a devastating tool in the lives of people. We're going to examine Nehemiah's response to this. Now, if I had the king's letters and I had whatever I needed at my hand, I'm not sure I'd act like Nehemiah, because I'm kind of a hardhead sometimes. But in verses, let's see, opposition comes. And it comes in four different types. This is the first one, mocking. The picture of some fan in the upper deck screaming at the players or whatever. And everybody around him starts going, oh, he's right. That coach is an idiot. We should get rid of that coach. Oh, that player, he fumbled. We ought to get rid of him. And it starts to spread, and all of a sudden the whole stadium's booing because somebody got mocked and they went through it. The same thing happened to these people in their lives that they were doing. They desperately needed some help to get through this. I had another picture, and I think I missent it or whatever, and it didn't get to Nadine. 2 weeks ago when I was working on all this at our school. We had that really warm spring that we had. Now it's winter again or whatever. The ice in the back parking lot gets no sunshine at our school. And the ice was about 4.5, 5 inches thick. But it was warm enough that if I took a big pole with a steel blade on it and I just kept shamping it down in it, I could break all the ice up into chunks. And I had a pile of probably 80 pieces of ice all piled up. And God went, "That's what it looks like. That's what the walls look like." It was just a pile of rubbish. It was just all these rocks. All these things were all around. And I thought, ooh, I don't think I could put all those pieces of ice back together and make a wall or a flat thing like it did. But you know how good it felt to bust every one of those pieces out? There, you can see it. That was all done by hand. It was a lesson for me to learn. That helped those people. Every rock they took out, the pile got smaller. They were encouraged to build, even though they were being opposed and being laughed at and said all of those things. And now Nehemiah's response in chapter 4, verse 14. Let me see, no, 6. So we built the wall and it was joined together to half its height, for the people had a mind to work. Does anybody in here have a half-done project at your house? Somebody does. Maybe 2 people. I think I heard that many. Oh, there's another hand. Okay. When you get halfway done, it's real easy to be discouraged, isn't it? That's where these people are at. Sanballat, Tobiah, and Gershom, they knew it. And they just begin to keep throwing opposition at them. Tell them they can't do it. They can't make it through it. And what does our old buddy Nehemiah do? He prayed again. Now, isn't that silly? He had the king's letters. He probably could have called the king's men and they would have taken those 3 guys to Susa. That's how much pull he had. And Nehemiah prayed. But the thing I like about this prayer, it's a mafia prayer. Have you ever prayed a mafia prayer? You're better than I am. Nehemiah prayed a mafia prayer. He prayed to God that God would turn what Sanballat, Tobiah, and Gershom were doing back on their own head. That they would go into captivity, that they would know how bad it is. And then he even said, "Don't wipe their sin away, God, and do not forgive them." Whoa, that's a mafia prayer. That's pretty serious. But when you do God's work, it's serious. And when God wants something done, he wants it done. And he puts people in charge and he says, "Go do this." And the best weapon that Nehemiah had was not the king's letters. It wasn't all the king's men. It was prayer. And why was it prayer? Because in Nehemiah's life, he'd seen it work. He prayed for 4 months that he wouldn't lose his life when he told the king that he wanted to go home. Because that could have happened. For 4 months, he prayed, I don't know, maybe most of the day when he wasn't with the king. And then the day came and he got the prayer answered because the king asked. And I think Nehemiah goes, "Phew, that's a normal way of my life. I don't throw stones, I pray." And he prayed that captivity would come upon them, that they would not be given, their guilt would not be forgiven, and their sin would not be wiped out. Pretty serious prayer. You and I need to make a battle plan for prayer. We need to practice it enough that when opposition comes, it's the first thing we turn to. not the last thing. Nehemiah gives us a good example. We need to make a battle plan for prayer. Let me just give you a small suggestion. I don't know if any of you know Stephen and Alex Kendrick. They made some movies with Sherwood Baptist Church, Outrageous or Courageous, War Room, Facing the Giants. You remember any of those? They've wrote a book called Battle Plan for Prayer. I would suggest you can buy it and read it. Practice it. Because it's exactly what Nehemiah did. He didn't grab all that he had to fight back. He grabbed a hold of the king's heart in heaven and said, God, we got to do what you've asked us. We're only halfway done. My people are demoralized. Can you make sure these three knuckleheads don't beat us? David prayed some pretty good prayers in Psalms too. God can handle them. Get a battle plan for prayer. I don't know if you remember watching Facing the Giants, but when the dad of the kicker stood at the end and he said, bring the rain. Goosebump moment. I've got him right now. He prayed that God would bring the rain. His son makes the kick. God does that in our lives. Sometimes he sits and waits for us to ask him, though. We need to be like Nehemiah, and we need to pray, and we need to have a battle plan. That's a key thing for each one of us. And those half-done projects, half-done with your marriage, half-done with paying bills that you can't afford to pay, half done with problems at work. Half done with problems with your kids. Half done with problems with health and sickness. All it takes is a few people to say something out in the stands and you begin to believe what they're saying and you think, it's no good. Turn to prayer first and foremost as you do through it. Chapter 4, verse 10. Is the second type of opposition, discouragement. No one in here has been discouraged yet. They might be in a minute. Things are serious now. Opposition thinks it's time to get serious because it hasn't been working. They're half done. They're scared that they're half done. And the Israelites are going, oh, geez, we're only half done. So our buddies, Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, they say, we need to really get serious about it. So you know what they say we're going to do? We're going to start attacking them. We might even kill a few of them. We're going to make it darn rough on these people. There's no way they're going to finish this wall. No way. So Nehemiah, he says, don't be afraid, guys. Stand and fight. A visual picture of this is happening every day on our TVs right now in Ukraine. Stand and fight. Resist what's going on. I don't care what side of the fence you stand on, but that's what's going on in that town. Yesterday, I saw a brief clip of an older lady walking out of her house with her finger pointed at three Russian soldiers with their guns standing at the gate, and she said, not in my house. And her husband, real brave guys, walking behind her. The three walked away. They stood and they fought for what was right because they remembered what freedom's like. And she was willing to give her life for it. She didn't lose it that we know of yet, at least in that clip. But we're seeing people stand and do what the people in Nehemiah's day did. In those extreme makeover shows, they start out really cool and good, and then somewhere in the middle, there's always bad stuff that happens. Termites get in the house. The sewer line is broken and been broken. They start eating again or whatever. They're just halfway done. That's what's going on with these people. And in verse 14 of chapter 4, when I saw their fear, I rose and spoke to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people. Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses. And it happened when our enemies heard that it was known to us that God had frustrated their plan, then all of us returned to the wall, each one of us to his work. Yeah. They had a battle plan. They didn't care if they got laughed at. They'd been called all of those things. They were discouraged. They were only halfway done. But their leader stood up and said, remember what God has done. So if you're halfway home in whatever it is that you're doing, my application to you today, remember what God has done up to that point. And you'll refine, or you will find new courage to go forward and build. Because God is faithful. His faithfulness is new every morning, the scriptures tell us. We just need to tap into it. He gave them a battle plan. We're not going to spend a lot of time on it. But in one hand, they carried the sword or a spear or a hammer or a rock that broke and wasn't big enough to put back in. And then they carried the stones in the other hand and they kept building the wall. And if they needed to fight, they were prepared and ready to fight. And it discouraged the opposition because they stood up and fought. Why did he tell them to fight? Christians are supposed to be pansy-nansy. No, they're not. That's not what he tells us. If you don't believe me, just go read some of Paul's books. Read 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. This is what he tells us. Fight the good fight. Keep the faith. Lay a hold of eternal life. It's a fight. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 3. Endure hardship. It's coming. Be prepared for it. As a good soldier would do. It's going to be tough. It's a battleground, not a playground. Be ready for it. For 2 Timothy chapter 4, near the end of Paul's life. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. There's nothing wrong with being strong and standing for what is right in a world that would like to tear us down. Stand. Remember what God has done to this point and make a stand. The third type of opposition as we move through comes in chapter 5, verse 1 through 5. Now there was a great outcry of the people and their wives against their Jewish brothers. For there were those who said, we are sons and our daughters are many. Therefore, let us get grain that we may eat and live. And there were others who said, we are mortgaging our fields, our vineyards, and our houses that we might get grain because of the famine. Also, there are those who said, we have borrowed money for the king's tax on our fields and for our vineyards. And now our flesh is like the flesh of our brothers, our children like their children. Yet behold, we are forcing our sons and our daughters to be slaves. And some of our daughters are forced into bondage already. And we are helpless because our fields and vineyards belong to others. The grass isn't greener on the other side. What's going on is there's a famine in the land. It's hard to find enough food to eat to have the strength to even build. They've had to mortgage what they had to get what little bit of food they could. And you know what the leaders did? They raised the taxes. That's never happened. Yeah. The same things that happened to us were happened to them. It's called usury. when you charge more interest than what is a fair price. And you're supposed to do that. And so things are bad. They're thirsty. They're hungry. Their taxes have gone up. They're having to borrow just to make ends meet. Their families are being sold into bondage just so they can make some of that. It's like being slaves again. Nehemiah's reaction. Verse 6. I like Nehemiah. Then I was very angry. Yeah, I get that. When I heard their outcry and these words, and I consulted with myself. You've done that before. And contended with the nobles and the rulers and said to them, you are exacting usury, each from his brother. Therefore, I held a great assembly against them. I brought all the people in. You guys are going to talk to these guys and we're going to get this worked out. That's what he said. And I said to them, we, according to our ability, have redeemed our Jewish brothers who were sold to the nations. Now, would you even sell your brothers that they may be sold to us? Then they were silent and could not find a word to say. Again, I said, the thing which you are doing is not good. Should you not walk in the fear of our God because of the reproach of the nations, our enemies? And likewise, I, my brothers and my servants are lending them money and grain. Please, let us leave off the usury. The third form of oppression is greed and selfishness. When you look across the gate and somebody's got it better than you do, you think it's not right. And when people charge you too much for gas, it's not right. Shouldn't be that way. Nehemiah handled it really good. In fact, he handled it so good they were silent. They couldn't even answer him. They didn't have an answer. So he told them, we shouldn't do that anymore. They all said, okay. He said, give them back their fields, give them their vineyards and their olive groves, give them back their land, and if somebody needs food, give it to them. We're not going to make this if we don't hang out together and get through this. This is the way God wants us to work as a believing body. The people said amen in verse 13. And then Nehemiah shares just a little bit of his example. He said, I had all this from the king. I could do whatever I want. I could have all the food I want. And I'm sharing it with everybody. People take advantage of us and others for their good. A few examples or application for us. Sometimes people do favors expecting you to pay them back. That's usury. That's using those people for your benefit. Nehemiah says, no more. Don't do that. It's not a good thing. Stop it. Some people want you to listen to their problems, but when you have a problem, they don't have time to listen. They use you. We use them if we do the same thing. Intimidation. There's that person at work that's a little intimidating. And we cower to them. We're afraid that it might cause problems someplace else. We may be one of those people. And Nehemiah says, no more. We're not going to do it. They signed oaths and they didn't do it anymore at that time. It was over. They got through it. Some New Testament help. Philippians chapter 2. Kind of, I've been there, so I understood it. Chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. Do nothing from a selfish attitude. Consider others more important than yourselves. Look out for others and their needs. a New Testament principle that Nehemiah was using in 445 BC. Nothing from selfish ambition. That's kind of difficult sometimes. We need to be looking out for others, is what Nehemiah is telling us to do. The last form of opposition is distraction. Have you ever been distracted? I see a picture of a fish and I'm distracted. I cannot figure out what I need to do at work with a sink that's not working. I want to look at pictures of fish in New Zealand. Satan knows that. And all of a sudden on my phone, fish pop up. It's amazing. I think they listen to me. You're laughing because it's happening to you too. Distraction is another form of oppression. We've already ended chapter 6, Lance, if you're following with me, buddy. 6:1-2. Now it came about when it was reported to Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, those three buddies, that I had rebuilt the wall and that there was no breach remained in it, although at that time I had not set up the doors of the gates, they're still building them, Sanballat and Geshem sent a message to me saying, come, let us meet together at Shephram in the plain of Ono. But they were planning to harm me. So I sent messengers to them saying, I'm doing a great work and I cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and come down to see you? Oh no. It's pretty serious now. The opposers are losing. The wall is just about finished. All the things they did didn't work completely. Yes, they got discouraged. The people said, we can't go on, we can't eat, all of that. But Nehemiah dealt with every one of those things in a godly way. And his three best enemies said, you know what we got to do? We got to get rid of Nehemiah. We can't beat him. No, they can't beat God. But Nehemiah was invited to the plain of Ono. I've never been there, but it's just outside of the city of Tel Aviv present day. A plain of Ono. I can just imagine, because I've never been, I didn't look it up. But I don't think it was the prettiest place in town. It was a place where not many people would go. They could have got rid of Nehemiah pretty easy out in Ono. And Nehemiah knew it, so he said, oh no, I'm too busy, I can't come down there. Four more times, they asked him to come again. Four times, they sent messengers, sent letters, everything. Come meet with us. Oh no, I'm too busy, can't come. You know what Warren Buffett says about saying the word no? He said it's the difference between really insanely successful people and just successful people. I called Clint Jantz on Friday. Excuse me for my nose. I said, Clint, I've had a really tough week. I've been working overtime. My son had to go to the doctor. I was out late. The clocks are going to get turned ahead. Could you teach my Sunday school class for me on Sunday? I'm really kind of behind. I thought, yep, he'll do it. I got a text back. Sorry, no. Oh, no. Yeah. I don't have time to prepare, and I have to help somebody with a complete electrical thing in their house, and I'll be busy all day tomorrow. He was looking out for somebody else's interests, and he didn't get distracted by me. And he said no. Christians, it's all right to say no in some cases. When it distracts us from what God wants us to do, it's all right to say no. When people use you, it's all right to say no. It's all right to stand up and fight, and it's always okay to pray. Those are the four things that Nehemiah has done through these four chapters. We can learn something from them. Thanks, Clint, for saying no. Because we can do that. Their final thing in these chapters, we'll see them till the end of the book. They tried to make it a religious problem. They hired a prophet. And they said, come on down to the temple and we'll have a meeting. Since you're so spiritual, come down here on the largest platform in the world at that time for a temple. Come down here. Oh no, I'm too busy. God's got things I need to do because I knew you were going to harm me. And he didn't go. And they found out that the prophet was wrong and all of those things and was taken care of. Now, the extreme makeover reveal. It's the end of the show. All that bad stuff's over. Now the music's playing and everything's going good. Chapter 6, verse 15. Should underline it. So the wall was completed on the 25th day of the month of Elul in 52 days. And it came about when all our enemies heard it and all the nations surrounding us saw it, they lost their confidence. They got their rears kicked. For they recognized that this work had been accomplished with the help of God. Not the king, not Nehemiah, not all of us, but together with the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. The wall was completed in 52 days. Now, I told you at the beginning, the whole wall wasn't torn down. There were some huge gaps, there were breaches, there might have been areas that had all been down. I'm not a math man, but I can figure out that in a mile, there's 5,280 feet. I had to ask my wife the first time, but I got it. I added two of those together, and then I added a half of one, and I came up with 13,200 feet of wall that needed to be fixed in 52 days. 253 feet of wall had to be built every day to make it in 52 days. That's a God thing. And that's the end of this message. We'll get more next time. Thank you.